I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. For this Wednesday, the cover story of The Atlantic this month, can Starbucks save the middle class inside a radical attempt to help Americans start and finish college? The author writes, last summer, Howard Schultz, the CEO of Starbucks, announced his company would team up with Arizona State University, one of the nation's largest public universities, to help Starbucks employees finish college. As long as they work 20 hours or more a week, any of the company's 135,000 employees in the U.S. would be eligible for the program. Amanda Ripley is investigative journalist for The Atlantic, Time, and other magazines. She's the author of The Smartest Kids in the World and How They Got That Way, a New York Times bestseller. Also author of The Unthinkable, Who Survives When Disaster Strikes and Why. She is the author of the story in The Atlantic, and she briefly worked at a Starbucks in Washington, D.C. after graduating from college in 1996 until she says she got a much easier job in journalism and quit. Later in the hour, we'll be speaking with a woman who's been managing Starbucks stores in Virginia for a number of years. She enrolled in the program, and we'll also speak with her success coach and academic counselor at Arizona State University. Welcoming your phone calls, as we always do. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, and that's @KDunnShow. Hello, Amanda. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
So indeed, was it harder to work at Starbucks than to be a journalist?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, they never actually let me work behind the espresso bar because I never got good enough at it.
Oh, well, you can always go back and learn sometime, right?
It's not too late. You're right.
Yeah, I'll
bet
they'll let you do that right now after this article. This is a really interesting idea, and you talk about, I can't remember where everybody was, but the head of Arizona State and the head of Starbucks, and I think Madeleine Albright were all at this conference. And is this where the idea first blossomed?
That's right. It was about two summers ago, and they were all there with a long list of notables in Aspen, Colorado, as part of a foundation effort to try to work on social mobility in the United States. And while they were there, Howard Schultz, the CEO of Starbucks, and Michael Crow, the president of Arizona State University, two members of this commission, sort of holed up in a corner and just started scheming, trying to figure out, you know, what could they do? Not wait for a commission or report or recommendations, but what could the two of them do right now to try to work on this problem of a lack of social mobility in the United States?
And you cite the lack of social mobility. These are interesting statistics. Between 1970 and 2012, you write, the proportion of 24-year-olds who came from affluent families and had a bachelor's degree went from 40 to 73%. Those 24-year-olds from low-income families and had bachelors went from just 6% to just 8%.
That's astonishing.
Isn't it? It is, I mean, yes.
You know, we feel like we've had this huge increase in the number of people going to college, and that's true. But as for the number of people finishing, the biggest predictor of that is, you know, your parents' bank account. Not even your academic ability, not race, not age, not other things, but your parents' ability to support you in every way.
Mm-hmm. And a number of the baristas at Starbucks are or have taken courses, right?
Right. Well, this was one of the interesting things, is traveling around the country talking to baristas, you find that they, like many, many, many Americans at this point, have a long and sometimes tortured history with college. You know, it's not that they haven't tried to go. It's that they haven't been able to finish. And so all of them had an experience of trying to go to college sometimes two or three times, sometimes online, sometimes in community college, sometimes at big four-year universities. And they all had stories about why it had not worked out until then.
And it wasn't just because of the cost, was it?
Well, it was interesting. They talked about the cost, obviously. That's a huge factor. But they would tend to blame their own personal circumstances. And you started hearing enough of these stories, and you started seeing that there were patterns, right? When you talk to adults who have tried to go to college, they tell you stories about waiting in line for 3 hours to sort out their financial aid problem, or dropping a class only to find out that the college bureaucracy had lost the paperwork and therefore decided that you had failed the class and now your scholarship money is in jeopardy, and getting tuition bills that made no sense and having no way to really grasp how much college was going to cost. Lots of things that are a combination of different problems, but are really kind of unacceptable when you look at the cost of college, the importance of a degree in the modern economy. That kind of uneven and sometimes just atrocious service is really, you know, unacceptable, but ultimately fixable, which is good news.
And I believe you cite that they are starting to make some fixes because fewer people are enrolling in college. It's becoming more expensive, and you would expect to have pretty good customer service.
Right. It's funny. It's not something we think about, you know, or expect. We sort of put it on the student, and to some degree, that's fair. But to some degree, you know, you should be able to have sort of baseline level of customer service, particularly for students who maybe are the first in their families to go to college, and they may not have the kind of support at home that affluent kids have. So, you know, it's really kind of low-level things like having the financial aid office open past 4:30, or having, an email sent to you if you drop a class that's required for your major. Things that can be automated and systematized and aren't necessarily overly expensive.
And if you've been to a number of different places, taking a number of different classes, getting transcripts can be a real hassle.
That was another pattern that emerged from these conversations, and many people listening may have their own stories about this. So if you've gone to multiple colleges, as now millions of Americans have, you have transcripts scattered around the state or country, and you then need to get the universities to send those transcripts to your new college in order to get credit. And that turns out to be sort of like getting your doctor to send your medical records. Sometimes it works, sometimes it's a huge pain. So that is a kind of nice symbol of the problem.
So what did the CEO of Starbucks hope to accomplish? You would think that if you were educating all of your employees and they were getting college degrees, that they would leave Starbucks, wouldn't they?
Well, that's one of the wonderful ironies, right? Yeah, about
right.
This program is he's basically saying, look, let me help you get a better job. And I think obviously he'd like some people to stay and rise up through the corporate ranks of Starbucks and work in Seattle headquarters. But that's you know, a small number of people for whom they'd have jobs like that. I think the goal is clearly to retain their best employees, their most ambitious and organized employees, longer than they currently retain them. I mean, the big challenge for Starbucks is not finding people to hire, it's keeping the good ones longer, because every time you have that churn, you have to retrain and deal with hiring and interviewing. So that is a clear business incentive that is beyond a doubt in their economic interest. At the same time, I think there's a softer goal, which is authentic. I mean, I don't doubt Howard Schultz when he says that he feels like this is important. It's close to his heart. He grew up in the public housing of Brooklyn. Neither of his parents had graduated from high school. He was the first in his family to graduate from college. You know, he made $20 million last year. You know, this is someone who used education as a rope ladder into the 1%, right, of the United States. So he feels like it's important. And I think it makes Starbucks customers feel good inside if they're spending $5 on a cup of coffee to know that there's some larger goal here.
Oh, I would imagine the PR is something that you can't put a price tag on.
Absolutely. I mean, I think for Starbucks, this is a no-brainer, right? I mean, they haven't spent that much money on it. They've definitely gotten great PR. They've gotten 20,000 people applied for jobs since they announced it, citing the college benefit as one of the reasons. I did interview baristas who had quit their jobs that paid more per hour in order to work for Starbucks explicitly for this college benefit. So for them, you know, it's nowhere near the cost of their health insurance benefit, which mm-hmm. was how they used to differentiate themselves.
I know that the program has been revised a little bit. Can you tell me where it stands now? How do you qualify for the education?
Yeah, I think this is really important and something other companies and colleges could probably learn from. When they started out, they wanted to make sure that students had, you know, skin in the game, so to speak. They wanted to really target students who would be most likely to finish and actually get their degrees, since that was the goal, not just to enroll students, but to finish. So they said that they would give you a full ride if you worked part or full time at Starbucks and you had at least 2 years of college credits already racked up. And then if you didn't, they would give you a steep discount until you reach that two-year level. What they found is that that was too complicated, and it created too much of a financial barrier for those students who didn't have 2 years of credits. It also, I think, created some, you know, distrust. I mean, there's a lot of anxiety that students bring to the table when they think about going back to college. And that complexity, you know, some of them would call up and, you know, click on the website all excited thinking that they were going to have college paid for and then find out, oh, actually, no. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to spend thousands of dollars until you get to that point. So in March, they changed it and they started paying full ride for every employee, regardless of how much college experience you'd had in the past. And they also increased the amount of support that students get, you know, the kind of counseling and coaching that we're going to talk about a little bit later, I think. And so to me, those two things are really important, you know, simplifying, lowering the financial barrier, and boosting the kinds of support that we know are really important, especially for low-income students. And doing those things quickly is to their credit. I mean, I think for Starbucks and Arizona State both to make such big changes based on student feedback so quickly shows that that's possible, you know? I mean, that it can be done. You can actually listen to students and make changes fairly quickly if you're motivated to do so.
We welcome phone calls. Some of you may be Starbucks employees and are participating in this program. It would be great to hear from you. Maybe there are a few of you who are working for other companies who offer similar kinds of benefits, although those kinds of companies maybe are few and far between because we don't hear very much about them, although it used to be more common in years past. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And before we pause for a moment and go to your phone calls, we have this message on Facebook. Amanda Reiter writes us, back in the early 80s, I worked for Illinois Bell Telephone, and they offered to all employees tuition reimbursement. This wasn't unusual. Nearly all of the big companies offered this as part of the benefits package. I think this Starbucks thing is newsworthy simply because people have forgotten what we used to get all the time, that and decent wages.
Well, that's interesting. You know, I have heard more companies now that we're coming out of the recession finally, and more companies are trying to get more creative about attracting talent. Chrysler, McDonald's, other companies have talked about boosting their tuition reimbursement. But what I actually found more interesting than the tuition reimbursement about this was that they were really focused on the results. Like, just spending more money on colleges doesn't necessarily mean we will get more social mobility. I think we know that by now as a country and as a taxpayer, we should know that. So really getting focused, not just on saying, hey, we'll pay for your college, but we'll put pressure on the college. We'll be very careful about which colleges we partner with to make sure that the quality of your experience is worth the money that we're spending. That, to me, is more innovative than as your reader says, just paying.
Mm-hmm. So to your phone calls momentarily, Amanda Ripley is our guest, and she's the author of the cover story of The Atlantic this month. Very interesting piece. Can Starbucks save the middle class? Inside a radical attempt to help Americans start and finish college. You are aware, I'm sure, of this program because it made a lot of news when it was announced by the head of Starbucks and also Arizona State University. They're working with them to provide college education to all people who are working at Starbucks. What do you think of this? Should more companies be doing this? We'll talk more about the expense to Starbucks. Amanda says when you compare it with healthcare costs, that it's not that much money. But what does it do in terms of attracting people who are bright, who are dedicated, who want to further their abilities in the workforce, maybe even at some other place, and really grooming a whole group of people who will eventually be in Seattle at the the headquarters of Starbucks, and they'll be college educated. 800-486-8655 is the number. The email, if you'd like to go that route, is talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We love to read your messages there, and Twitter @KDunnShow. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Amanda Ripley, this hour, we're talking about how to graduate from Starbucks. Starbucks and Arizona State University recently joining forces to help baristas get college degrees. She asks, have they come up with a model for helping more Americans reach the middle class? Let's go to calls. Gail in Fish Creek. Hi, Gail.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I can understand where it really is difficult for the kids to get inspiration and support. A lot of times from their families when they're the first ones to go to college and change the patterns in the family tree. But there are opportunities. My friend's daughter went out of the country for her master's and actually got a better level of education from the reviews that she got, and it actually was less money. And the one other thing I have to say is I don't really believe that the $20 million is actually the 1%. That everybody is always complaining about. Those are people more like the Waltons and the Astors and the Morgans. Those are those people. I don't think that the head of Starbucks really would be the upper echelon 1% that makes all their money off of old investments, some very old money.
So what do you think of the Starbucks program? Do you think it should be a model, Gail, for other companies?
I think it's a great idea. And there's actually corporations that have, I come from the corporate world, and there are companies that will actually pay for higher degrees for employees. And they just have to make an agreement that they stay with the company and they do these programs so that the company will get their time out of them with the expertise that they learn. So there are corporations that have been doing that for decades now. And for Starbucks to be doing this, I think it's a really great idea. I think I commend him for doing that.
Thank you. Amanda.
Well, it is true that you're right. I misspoke. Howard Schultz is one of the 0.01%. That is a very big number, $20 million. But I think, yeah, there are other companies that reimburse. There are lots of them do require you to stay for a number of years after you finish your degree, which, again, you can understand. I think when you're dealing with a workforce like Starbucks or any number of hospitality, food service businesses, that is not really a way to help increase social mobility, right? Like they need to have the flexibility then move on to a more higher paying career if they can. So that is a distinction that I think hopefully we'll see more companies give employees that flexibility.
Do you know anything about the makeup of the people who are taking advantage of this opportunity? Do they come from low-income families? Amanda? Hello?
I'm sorry, I lost the last half of your question.
Oh, well, I should tell you because that was a key part of the first part of the question. do the people who are taking advantage of the program come from low-income families?
Oh, good question. Yes. So we know that most of them do come from low-income families, not all, but they are relatively similar to the population at Arizona State Online overall. So that is to say a much higher percentage come from low-income families than you'd see at many other public universities where we've seen a decline in the number of low-income families doing that. So certainly many are the first in their family to go to college. Many are juggling kids or other obligations. Most are working full-time. And so, you know, like a lot of adults trying to finish their degree, they don't have a lot of buffer. And that's part of the reason that schools need to be very thoughtful about how they serve these students. You know, if one thing goes wrong and you've got, you know, a kid or two and maybe you're working 50 hours a week and trying to study, it can easily lead to a spiral of doom.
Sure.
Where you end up dropping out.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, you've done a lot of work in the education field. When you ask the question, has Starbucks and Arizona State come up with a model for helping more Americans reach the middle class? Because the statistics with which we started the show are startling. startling, and you want to have a society where a lot more than 8% of low-income people are graduating from college. Is this the way we have to go?
Well, I don't think Starbucks or other companies unto themselves are going to be able to make the changes that we need at scale, but I do hope that their focus on results is something that's contagious. I mean, I do think that the federal government certainly and a handful of more innovative, agile universities have gotten much more focused on, instead of just enrolling students, let's make sure they're succeeding. Let's actually look at what works. We now know that some things do really help students who are quite capable of graduating from college succeed in less than 8 years. And so let's make sure we invest our resources wisely in schools that are really focused on helping students succeed, get the skills they need, and get out into the economy where they can thrive very quickly and efficiently.
And was the partnership done with Arizona State University because that model was already in place?
Partly because, yes, Arizona State had gotten much more economically diverse under its president's leadership over the past 10 years. Michael Crow has really increased the number of students there who come from low-income families. I think it's at 40% right now, which is much higher than you see at some other large public universities. So, you know, they picked Arizona State partly because it has changed its culture and is trying to continue changing its culture to be more about supporting students, making sure they get what they need, challenging them, and less about just enrolling students and gaining public research funds or, you know, gaining prestige.
We're going to invite to the air now to one woman who has managed Starbucks stores in Virginia for a number of years. She is featured in Amanda's article in The Atlantic. She enrolled in the program and has been doing very well, partially because of her coach, who's also with us, Daniel Adams, her success coach. There's somebody we all need in our lives, our success coaches, and academic counselor at Arizona State University. Amanda, feel free to jump in and question them or amplify what they have to say at any point. Mary Hamm, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you are close to graduation, aren't you?
I will be done in January, yes.
All right. The end is in sight, Mary.
Yes, it is, and it gets harder each 7 weeks.
And Daniel Adams, her success coach. Daniel, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Kathleen.
Yeah.
Hi, Mary. Hey, Amanda.
Oh, you do sound like a success coach. I like your enthusiasm. Mary, tell me about you. You have been working at Starbucks for a long time, and you've had a few operations on your feet because you've been in the food business for a long, long time and on your feet all day long. Why did you decide to follow through with this program, and what do you hope to do with a college degree, and what do you think about Starbucks offering it to you?
Well, you're right. I've been with Starbucks for 12 years, managing all that time. And before that, I was in management in food restaurants for another 15 years. So been on my feet a rather a long time, and five surgeries in the 12 years I've been with Starbucks. So when the program first came out, I didn't even think about it as being something for me. I was more concerned about the partners that worked for me. Young people who had dropped out of college because they couldn't afford it or they had to work and couldn't do both. But it only took a day for me to realize, hey, wait, this is for me as well. You know, I put my college career on hold to raise three children as a single mother. Mm. And when they got into high school, when my youngest got into high school, this program came out, and I said, oh, I think I can do this now. So I signed up. And my goal, I will have a bachelor's degree in organizational leadership, in which I hope to transition into something different within Starbucks that will get me off my feet.
Right.
So that I don't end up in a wheelchair, which is where I'm headed if I don't get off my feet.
Yeah, you need to get off your feet. And what's interesting is that you had applied, I understand from the article, for more than 15 corporate jobs, had been passed over in favor of other people who had more formal education. But as you just said, you raised three children on your own. You also started a nonprofit to help homeless people in your area. So you had experience, you have compassion, you have drive, but you needed the college degree.
Absolutely. That has been the one thing that has held me back in all of those jobs, just about.
Mm-hmm. And Daniel, tell me how it is that you map Mary's progress. How are you helping her succeed in college?
Yeah, the biggest thing that I do as a coach is I try to ask great questions. The role of the coach is really I'm an expert on getting to graduation. That's why I issue an inside track, pay my salary. The corollary to that, though, is that each student, Mary and everyone, they're an expert on their own strengths, obstacles, and goals and dreams, and Mary just touched on that. So in order to do my job well and to give students like Mary the best possible chance of getting to graduation, I need to get to know her. I need to ask great questions, be self-deprecating. I call it listening between the lines. I need to build trust so that when the student runs into an obstacle or starts to doubt herself, we know one another well enough to be vulnerable and talk about what's actually going on and what resources can be brought to bear.
Mary, I think you referred to him as almost a member of your family at this point, right?
Correct.
Did you feel apprehensive about starting? Did you feel that you weren't quite up to it, that you were nervous about college? After you'd done all these things in your life, I would have thought you had a lot of self-confidence, but maybe not.
No, not with school. I did not. I revert back to my high school where I did fairly well, but I also, you know, suffered from low self-esteem. So even then, I didn't think I was good enough. And so that was what I felt when I first started college with Arizona State, is I'm not going to make this. It's going to be difficult. I won't have the time. And that first phone call from Dan, it was like, you know, I walked through all that with him, and he was able to get me through it and realized I was spending the correct amount of time doing my homework and doing my assignments and then walking me through some of the issues that I was having.
Mm-hmm. And one of the issues, I believe the article states that you were taking your first test or quiz or something, and you didn't realize that it was an open book quiz, and you did pretty well without using the book.
Yeah, I didn't know you could do open book, so that was a big eye-opener for me.
I would imagine. Daniel, I'm sure it helps for you because you're a former middle school science teacher, aren't you?
I am, yeah. I taught middle school science at Holy Family Elementary in Birmingham, Alabama.
Uh-huh. And does that experience help in your coaching? And if so, in what ways?
Of course. I mean, my master's degree is in education. So I start this process of coaching with a deeply held belief in the power of education to change outcomes for not just individuals, but for communities and neighborhoods and cities. Definitely. I think Mary touched on confidence. The importance of confidence to graduation isn't unique to Mary. It's not unique to college. You know, from my experience, I've been coaching for almost 7 years now. I've been in higher ed and student services for nearly 15 years. I'd say confidence is the single biggest factor. On a long enough timeline, everyone will encounter an obstacle which could negatively impact their ability to get to graduation. It doesn't represent a failure by the student. It's just the way life works. So that's why in our very first conversation, I asked Mary, what are you going to have to overcome to earn this degree? And she talked about the importance of confidence. And so I think I literally asked her in the first conversation, would it be okay if we just sort of imagined at the beginning of every conversation a confidence graph and checked, you know, in which direction is the graph headed today? Is it pointed up? That is, you're more confident today than you were when we talked last week. Has it plateaued? That is, like, the confidence hasn't gone up or down. Or is it pointing down? You're less confident because of what's going on than when we talked last week. I ask that every time, you know, the overcoming to earn the degree, I ask that every time I meet a student. So, that's how we got into that conversation about confidence, is because I want to know what the student already knows about their own strengths and the obstacles they're likely to face.
Mm-hmm. Mary, you had wanted to be a nurse, didn't you?
Yes, originally, yes.
And there wasn't money in the family to go to college, or what happened?
No, there was not. There were six children, and, and it was only my father that worked at the time, so no, it was not an option at that time.
And then you wound up having children at a pretty young age yourself.
I did, so, which I don't regret, but, you know, it did put my education on hold.
Did you take any courses before you started enrolling in this program? Did you have any credits?
Yes, I actually, younger years when my first child was small, I did get a degree in medical assisting, a certificate.
Oh.
I did that for a while, and then I stopped that completely. And I went through the University of Phoenix to get an associate's degree in human services. And I stopped that because their tuition was extremely expensive, and I'm still paying that student loan off.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes. And what about the people you're working with at Starbucks? Do you know many who have taken advantage of this college program?
More now that they went to 100% tuition, but even before, I was always encouraging my partners as well as partners I met out in the area in different stores that if I can do it, they can do it. So the more that I talk about it, the more students are becoming interested in enrolling.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And Daniel, tell me, if self-confidence is a huge obstacle here, how do you go about having conversations with people, and how long does it take to boost somebody's self-confidence?
I wish I knew all the details to that answer. You know, I think the most important thing is students need to see a coach as a partner. You know, I loved the article. In fact, I have talked with students about it because I think most students have the reaction that Mary described having, which is, who is this guy and why is he calling me three times a week? I think that's where all of the relationships start. So, you know, as a coach, I have a bag of tricks that I show up with. I try to be self-deprecating. I try to be funny. I try to, I think about having the conversation on the students' areas of expertise. So give them home field advantage by talking about their own life and their own strengths and the obstacles that they're facing, tapping into the goals and dreams they have. One of the most valuable tools that I have as a coach is quickly establishing those relationships, because I think one of the hardest things for humans, this isn't students, this is for humans to admit, is I am not confident. You know, at work, we're told to project confidence. When we go to interviews, you should be confident. And there are very few times in our life when we're encouraged to be vulnerable, to say, Dan, I didn't get as high of a score on the quiz as I wanted, and really what's happening is it's undermining all of my confidence and my ability to do this degree. That can happen in the very first week, you know, and I think Mary described something like that happening in the article. So in the second conversation we have to establish enough vulnerability and enough trust to be able to talk about what's actually happening. Even though she's still passing the class after getting a 7 out of 10, that carries a meaning for her that far exceeds one score on one quiz. It sort of has implications in her own mind for how likely she is to get to graduation and all those things. And again, Mary's incredibly unique and special, and that happens for almost every student I talk with. So the vulnerability and trust, being able to make that connection quickly, is an important part of the work that I do, because if I'm going to ask you how it's going in the second week, I need you to give an honest response that gives us both something that we can work on to help you build the knowledge, skills, attitudes, and beliefs that are going to be so important for you to get to graduation.
Yeah, oh, that's wonderful. Mary, how are you taking the courses? Are they online?
Yes, they're online.
And how are you able to arrange this into your pretty busy life?
It's pretty tough, but I'm pretty dedicated to it. I do set aside the time every single day to do a little bit of homework, and also being able to calendar out when an assignment is due. Like the classes I'm in right now, I only have assignments due on Tuesday and Friday, but there's a lot of work on those 2 days, so it's taking the rest of the week to stretch out everything that is due so that I give enough time. And I'm lucky to live on the East Coast, so I actually have till 3 o'clock in the morning to turn in an assignment in Arizona.
Oh, no.
A little bit.
Oh, aren't you lucky for that, Mary? Oh, my goodness.
I am lucky.
Right. Yeah. You are dedicated. We're welcoming phone calls, and here's how you reach the conversation. We're talking about Starbucks and Arizona State University. Can Starbucks save the middle class? It's the cover story of The Atlantic. The author of the piece has been with us, and we'll reconnect with her in a little while. She is an investigative journalist for The Atlantic, Time, and other magazines. She spoke with baristas in Starbucks all over the country, and it gives a very thorough examination, not only of what Starbucks is doing, but why it is that so many low-income people in this country graduate from college. The figure is very, very low. If you're from an affluent family, your chances of being college-educated by the age of 24, 73% of those people are college graduates. Low-income families, only 8%, and it's only gone up like 5 percentage points over the past 20 some more than 20 years. So how do we go about making sure that low-income people have access to better paying jobs, to college degrees, which makes all the difference in the world in terms of being able to find a better paying job? So joining us this part of the show, Mary Hamm, managing Starbucks stores in Virginia for a number of years. She enrolled in the program and she is going to graduate next January. She is almost there. She has been managing Starbucks stores for 12 years. She has been in the food industry for many years before that, and with so many years on your feet, she has had foot problems, and she's had 2 metal plates in the right foot, 5 surgeries. The left foot needs surgery as well. She says she is in pain all the time, so walking 6 miles back and forth behind the espresso bar during the course of 13 hours is not good for your feet. So after applying for many corporate jobs and response, you don't have enough education, she went into this program, and she is almost there. And you can't underestimate the importance of a success coach who is also with us, Daniel Adams. He is her success coach and academic counselor at Arizona State University. Here's our number. We'd love to hear from you. What do you think about this program? If you are a low-income person who's trying to get a college degree, is this the way? Does it make you want to work at Starbucks? Is this the answer to getting low-income people into school in this country? And what about that disparity? Our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we are also on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go back to phone calls, and Amanda has rejoined us for answers to the questions that are coming in. Let's go to Pete in Bellevue. Hi, Pete.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm great.
Good.
I have a question that's a little off, but, you know, maybe she can address it, and it's such a good forum to have WPR, so here goes. My thought is, I know that there's a sense of need and responsibility in generally in society to bring people along, and that's the whole part of helping the common good and not just the few. And I know that it's great that the corporate area is trying to help out, but sometimes, you know, I've heard in the past, and maybe someone can address it, that Starbucks and others have actually formed alliances in Europe to avoid corporate income tax or corporate tax, which really actually hurts, you know, the ability of people to fund roads or fund schools and things like that. And so even though there's a positive element of what they're doing, I'm just kind of wondering, you know, how that slices with their public relations avoiding corporate tax.
Amanda?
Yeah, look, I think it's a big company. It's a publicly traded company, and you need to look at it from many angles, right? I mean, Starbucks delivers highly caffeinated, extremely sugared beverages around the world. They are not above criticism on many levels, not just taxes and not just nutrition. So I think that's a fair point. With this piece, we were trying to very carefully follow one semester of this new innovative attempt to do one thing. This is one of many things that Starbucks does. So this doesn't, I think, provide some kind of amnesty for everything else that Starbucks does. So I think that's a good point. And my hope, you know, and this may be naive, but my hope is that we take away from this, look, Starbucks is not some kind of heroic outlier. What the question is, why aren't more companies doing this? Not just Starbucks and not just Arizona State, but why aren't more companies and colleges focused on making sure students graduate? Why aren't there more Coach Dans out there? And why aren't we spending more of our precious treasure on that kind of support instead of, you know, making sure that you're number 13 in the U.S. News rankings and other things that have nothing to do with helping improve social mobility in the United States?
Well, how do you answer that question, Amanda? Why aren't we?
I don't think that's the way that universities have been set up in this country, and maybe that's another conversation. But in general, universities have been incentivized to enroll students, which they are outstanding at doing. They have been incentivized to raise money for research and alumni donations, which they are very good at doing. And they've been incentivized to improve their prestige and status of their professors. None of those things have anything to do with improving social mobility in the United States and making sure students graduate with work with meaningful degrees and certificates that will help them thrive in an economy that's changing very fast. Now, the good news is those incentives are shifting. And so some universities, not most, are trying to adapt for those new paradigms that we're facing. They're finding it harder to just keep enrolling more and more and more students. They are finding it harder to just keep sucking down more and more tax money without regards to what they deliver in exchange. So that is putting some pressure on universities to get more serious about the results they deliver.
Thanks very much, Pete, for your call. Molly in Madison, hi.
Hello.
Hi, Molly. Go ahead.
Okay, thanks. I have two questions. One is, if the program is also for people who want to, let's say they finish their bachelor's, they want to maybe go on and get their master's, but they feel stuck. And then the second question is for the success coach. Just wondering if he's done any kind of training specifically for being a coach, more than what he already mentioned, and does he use assessments?
All right, let's start with Dan first, the success coach, and we'll go to Amanda for question one. Dan?
Yeah, the company I work for, Inside Track, does a great job of training coaches. I went through 2 weeks of training as I was getting started, and then there was ongoing training to continue to help build my skills. Like, we use the phrase lifelong learners enough that we could run a small factory with the power we spend saying that phrase. We believe in continuing to build our skills. We believe in continuing to do better work because we work with amazing students like Mary who are trying to achieve really big things against difficult odds. It's critical that we continue to build our skills as we go. In terms of assessments, there are assessments that we have developed. We certainly pay attention to assessments that executive coaches, life coaches, academic coaches use. We try to bring in the best resources because we believe so passionately about the work that we're doing for students like Mary.
And Mary, how critical is Daniel, your success coach, to your success?
I think without him, I probably would have quit after the first week.
Really?
Yes. I was so stressed out because of that one first test and my reading skills that he was able to walk me through that. And it's through that I have maintained straight A's. I could have not done it without him. Straight A's. And that's my goal. I have a goal to graduate with straight A's, although that A is not on my degree. It's just something that's embedded to me to work as hard as I can. And I think Dan knows that, and he worked with me to, okay, so if you get a B in this class, what you going to do? And he's been able to walk me through that process of preparing me in that case that I don't get that A, and knowing that that will be okay.
Mary, it's okay. I if you need me to say that too, and everybody else, a B is okay, Mary.
I am pretty hard on myself.
I guess you are. And what about the master's aspect of this, Amanda?
At this point, I don't believe they are reimbursing for masters, but who knows? Maybe they'll expand it in due time. I do want to say very quickly that, what Mary just said is really important. I mean, here's someone who might have dropped out after 1 week who's now getting straight A's. So sometimes people say to me, hey, okay, college isn't for everyone. Maybe these people aren't college material. Mary Hamm is college material. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it just takes a little support to help her get through. And then she's more resilient than most people I work with. So the funny thing I've noticed is in talking about this piece, some people will say, hey, you know, if students need all this coaching, then maybe they're not ready for college. Right. But those same people, some of them, they're hiring tutors for their own kids. They have advisors,
Absolutely.
Private advisors helping their kids get into Ivy League colleges. And they're not to mention they're stroking a check for, you know, $60,000 every year for their kid to get this elite experience. So let's be honest about our own support systems that we've all had if we've gotten through college. Because what I've found is that having spent a lot of time with her, Mary Hamm is far more competent and resilient than many, many people who've graduated from Ivy League universities. She just needs a little support, and it's not a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Amanda.
You're welcome.
800-486-8655 is our number. Richard in Minnesota, hi.
Hello. I could speak to practically everything you're talking about today. I just went back to school to Cardinal Stretch out in Milwaukee for my master's degree program. And I have to share that I had open communication with my professors, and they more than willingly supported me. It's like I went in, my undergrad was like a 2.5, and I ended up, I just graduated this spring with a 3.7.
Great.
So, it's a matter of what you put into it. You have the encouragement from your instructors. You have that open communication with them. And even with the admissions advisor, it's like they coached me, they supported me through the entire program. The advisor's there for you, so are the instructors. But I'm almost wondering sometimes, and I did my master's thesis on the baby boom. What's going to happen with the baby boom after there's going to be a lull in the number of people that are out there for available for employment? And it's more that kids aren't graduating from high school even. That's what, and we need the trade. I don't think it's so much that we need the bachelor's degree out there or even the master's degree program. It's that we need to have the trades. We need to bring the trades back, and that's how we're going to make the economy even strong in the U.S. It's going to be, you're going to need the machinists. You're going to need the manufacturers. That's what's going overseas because of the wages, or so they say. But it's like those people that are caught up in the baby boom, those are escalating the wages up higher even than what a bachelor's degree program can pay. So my thought is go for a skilled trade degree program. I should have probably done that. But, now I've got the master's, it's like I'm overqualified.
Amanda, are we putting too much emphasis on college?
I think that your caller makes a really good point. I mean, it is true that everyone needs some kind of post-high school training at this point, but you can get a certificate in HVAC repair and make more than a third of the people who have four-year bachelor's degrees. So that is true. In the United States, though, the way that trades work typically is that you go through a community college or something and get a certificate. So it's still quote-unquote college, but it may not be a four-year degree. And I think it's absolutely true that not everyone needs a four-year degree. Here's the thing. Many millions more people in the United States need a four-year degree than we're currently graduating. So we still have a ways to go before we have too many people getting a four-year degree.
All right. Amanda, thanks so much for writing the article. It was really interesting and a great eye-opener, and we leave with a lot of questions and a lot of good thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen. It's been great to have this time to dig into some of it.
I know. And Mary, go get 'em.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're almost there, Mary.
Almost.
I know. And you're going to make it, and I'll be really interested to find out what you're doing a year from now.
I will let you know.
Thank you, Mary. That would be good. Daniel, thank you so much. You're doing important work, and that must make you feel really good.
It does. I'm really lucky to be on a team of people doing great work.
Thank you to all of our guests. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing the hour, and to Scotty as well for on-air production here in Milwaukee Studios. The piece that we have been talking about is the cover story of this month's Atlantic Magazine, Can Starbucks Save the Middle Class? Inside a radical attempt to help Americans start and finish college. Starbucks offering free college through Arizona State University to all of their employees, hoping to bridge the gap between those who have and those who have not many funds to get through university. Well, we have news coming up in just a moment from National Public Radio, and we'll continue and we'll talk about another program. Speaking of technical areas, this is a combination of tech learning and all kinds of other learning, hands-on and classroom learning. You'll hear about it, hour two.